Hello and welcome to edition 161 of the NRF1 podcast, your Formula One podcast recorded right here in Norfolk, UK. Brought to you by our proud partners Grand Prix Racing Online, and you can sign up to their game by visiting nrf1.uk or gpro.net/nrf1. My name is sports journalist and sometime F1 correspondent Michael Bailey, and in this podcast we are going to discuss all the latest Formula One news, as well as your bits and pieces in tweets and social. Coming up, honorary Norfolkian Timo Glock's F1 return? Fernando Alonso goes loopy. And we've got an answer to the weird Toro Rosso light. I mean, that is a menu, isn't it? This is the first of our, this is the first of our bite-sized podcasts this week. Three in 3 days. Once we've knocked this into shape, we'll be back with our Spanish Grand Prix preview and our Catalunya predictions podcasts. And joining me on the pod for tonight's F1 fun are two times Beckles kart champion Carl Cumbers.
Good evening.
And current Predictions League champion Steve Rust.
Evening.
There are the gents. Look at that. What a lovely roundup. Before we get stuck in, how are we? Are we well? Are we refreshed from a, you know, 2 week break?
Extremely, yeah. Looking forward to the Spanish Grand Prix.
Are you?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I've forgotten about Russia. It's gone. But I would ask how you were, but it's a bit of dosage of man flu.
I think it's the football season or soccer season has come to an end. I think it's I was hoping to maybe people wouldn't notice, but that's probably being it. When I have a coughing fit in the middle of the podcast, people are, no. Steve, how are you? I love your jumper.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm just amazed I have to wear a woolly jumper in nearly mid-May.
Yeah, but it should be a little bit warm. Too warm for that, really, by now.
Indeed, yeah.
There is a little video on Twitter and Facebook if you want to see Steve's jumper in action being worn. You can follow us at Facebook, fb.me/thenrf1, or Twitter, @thenrf1, which is also the Facebook handle. Two, worth flagging up, if you've got our feeds, wherever you follow us, and thank you for following us, get on to edition 160. That is our survey podcast. It's 1 hour and 9 minutes 9 seconds. It was the shortest I could make it. It is one to maybe stow away for when you've got a spare moment. Dan Springle, a friend of the podcast. Thanks, Dan, for listening. He binged on it while he was supposed to be revising. Brilliant. That's the way to do it. We solve it. We did literally solve F1, didn't we, in that podcast, Steve? Did we?
I can't remember. It was too long.
The progressive breakdown of Steve Rust through the hour is fantastic listening in itself. But make sure you give it a listen. And the link will be in the show notes as well. So hopefully you'll be able to find it there. It's well worth it. But we're here really to discuss the Formula One news. So let's do that. And first of all, we'll come up with a first piece that I think came out today. If not, it was certainly at the start of this week. The projected 2017 revenue payments for Formula One. Fascinating viewing because we know how badly proportioned this sport is in terms of its revenue, Kyle. And this just kind of underlines a breakdown that you've basically got Ferrari, top of the pops. They would be because, remember, in the words of Eddie Jordan, Ferrari are Formula One, which, of course, is no issue in terms of the integrity of the competition. £180 million
dollars
they're due to get in 2017. And that is, what, more than three times as much as Toro Rosso and well over double Force India. Haas, at the bottom of that pile, £19 million.
Dollars.
It's crazy how such a huge difference. It's fair enough having, if you finish top, you get more money, as in like the Premier League football. You finish top, you get more money than the team finishes 10th. But it's the huge difference between it. I even don't really mind if you get this, or the older teams, if they get a little bonus, say, each year. But it's 35 million a year, nearly double what Haas get all their money from. For new teams as well coming in, which we've seen the three teams that came in 2010 that failed, so hard to actually get into F1. And then when you finish at the bottom, like Sauber have done for at least, well, I can't remember the last time they were competitive, but it's hard to get out of that rot you're in. And it would just improve racing if the money was closer together. There wasn't a huge range between top team and small team. But unfortunately, it's probably not going to change until 2020. The Concorde Agreement finishes, and hopefully they can do something. And also, it'd be quite nice if they just done an agreement part of one. Like all the teams put together, and they sign a relatively similar agreement, and go from there. And then, as I saw today, that Red Bull get an extra $35 million for being the first ones to sign the Concorde Agreement, making it sound like some sort of competition winners there. And it's just not fair.
Well, and intrinsically that then plays out in the actual competition, doesn't it, Steve? I mean, how big a priority is this in terms of Liberty Media sorting out Formula One?
Well, I have read things where they don't agree with how the current payment system is. And you know, the point that Carl just made about Red Bull, I mean, that's quite a valid point. But in terms of generally how, you know, the top team gets the most and so on and so forth down to the bottom of the pile, I think it's hard to change that because it kind of, you're rewarding success. So if you do well and you do better than last year, you get a bit more money. And if you invest that wisely, and then, you know, you can theoretically progress yourself up the table. And that is why, you know, a lot of people sort of think, well, you know, why are teams sort of particularly concerned about trying to beat another team and the constructors towards the end of the season? This is a clear example why. So I think it would be hard to come up with a system really that still rewards success in terms of money, but then pleases in terms of the interests of perhaps fairness. I don't know, it's very difficult, but I think they will get changed because they have made comments that's something that they just don't agree with. So,
I mean, it needs someone to take the bull by the horns, doesn't it? We can, and not obviously Red Bull, as in all generally, because you can't have the teams running the sport. It's been a fundamental issue with Formula One for a number of years. And it's really interesting looking at this list. Ferrari are top. They get £68 million.
Dollars.
In terms of their long-standing team bonus. It's an amount of money that no one else gets. £68 million compared to 19 for Haas. That £68 million is more than Haas, Sauber, Renault, and Toro Rosso in total.
Just below.
And what?
Force India?
Yeah, 4 million. Only 4 million less than what Force India picked up. Renault taking a 19% hit compared to 2016. I mean, quite what McLaren have done to earn 18% more money than last year. I cannot fathom that. And I guess in a way, we criticise the fact that Red Bull have picked up 35 million quid for signing it first. They're probably the weird and wonderful ways they've tried to make it more equitable because, you know, Red Bull get 35 million for that. Mercedes get 35 million pounds.
Dollars.
For an other. I don't, maybe they were second for signing it. Williams get 10 million extra for something else. I mean, and then obviously McLaren's bizarre bonus from somewhere. They're clearly trying to help, you know, the teams towards the top just be a little bit closer. But, I mean, this is basically a perfect reconstruction of the Constructors' Championship, really, isn't it? Bar McLaren, probably.
It also shows that how well Force India have done in the last 3 years. I mean, it's fourth last year, the fifth the year before, and they're only getting $4 million
dollars
more than Ferrari's historical payment. So you're saying all reward success. Force India have done a brilliant job to get, well, in 10 years when they're at the back of the grid, to now being fourth and fifth on a limited budget, and they're still only getting $4 million more than Ferrari just get for being Ferrari.
Well, there's one more question I want to ask them, really, and keep it to a brief one. Do you cut that money and risk Ferrari walking out on the sport? Does the sport survive without Ferrari?
I think the sport could survive without Ferrari. I don't think it's like the sort of the 70s or maybe sort of the 2000 period when the sport was seen as Ferrari. I think it's very fundamentally different, and I think it could easily survive without them. I don't particularly see why that would really make any difference to the survival of the sport, to be honest.
I don't think they'd walk out anyway.
No.
But personally, Kyle?
I think Ferrari needs F1 more than F1 needs Ferrari.
Moving on. Honda, what do they need? Kick up the f***ing ass. They are in at Sauber. It's been confirmed. I think we touched on it in our Russia review, to be honest. But the question is really, what does it really mean? There's some quotes today, I think, from Manisha Kaltenborn. Of course, the Sauber team principal. She says, Sauber are open to anything. I mean, engines, clearly. But I mean, what are we expecting from this, Kyle? Because we've had a few discussions. People listening to the past podcast will know your views on it. And Sauber could end up being a Honda Works team, I suppose. But is that kind of what Manisha is saying there?
I think they're open to being sort of like a Honda test team, maybe test, because obviously they're so far behind their engines that they can try new parts of this or whatever, or maybe even a Honda young driver they would accept. But I think it's a good move for them because with having year-old engines at Ferrari, I can't imagine they get a huge amount of support from Ferrari because Ferrari are obviously developing The current year's engine, that's all they can afford, probably, due to the payments they receive, is a year-old Ferrari engine. So I think they might as well take the risk, and Honda seem open to helping another team. I mean, they're not going anywhere at the moment, so they might as well take the risk, and hopefully Honda can support them. And also, you never know what happens with McLaren. They could end up being, like I say, full support from the Honda. So, yes, I think it's just worth the risk. I mean, they're going nowhere at the moment.
Well, backwards would be one way of describing it. I mean, clearly, I think the suggestion, probably the attraction for Honda, is that they will have more freedom. I think there's clearly been a lot of friction between McLaren and Honda over how best to do things. So this way, Honda are going to get carte blanche. Now, we will then quickly find out if they are going to fall short with how they do that, and they are the issue, and maybe McLaren will benefit from that themselves. I mean, that's a tricky one, isn't it, with McLaren?
Yeah, it is, but I think that's kind of part and parcel of it. I mean, they were almost very new to coming to the sport, really, in terms of their setup. Obviously, they've been a fully fledged manufacturing team in the past, but I mean, there's none of that as with the current Honda F1 team. So, the two things that I read into this, I wonder whether the Honda engine for Sauber is cheaper than the engine that they have been using to save money, because there's not a lot of money at that team, from what I see. And the second thing is, I wonder whether Honda are looking towards the future, in terms of, you know, sort of getting with the team and seeing how it goes, as to whether they want to buy the team out, return to the sport as a fully fledged manufacturer again, because things are different now with Liberty and Bernie's out of the way. That's the two the way I look into it and see possibilities.
It gives them a little bit of wiggle room to see if they can do it before they do it, I suppose. Well, I'm kind of bored of talking about McLaren, to be honest, and we'll just see what they do, and I'm sure we'll mention them before this week of podcasts is done. But they have McLaren launched an esports search for a sim star kind of thing. Are any of us good enough to do that? Fancy that car? You're karting background lights?
I might give it a go, but McLaren seem more interested in doing stuff outside of F1 at the moment, because they're so worried about their performance on track, they seem to be diverting.
Nothing to see here. We're f***ed. It doesn't matter. It's all right. All right, well, let's move it on to, Fernando Alonso. He did his Indy test, his first test around Indianapolis, the Oval. Anyone watch it? Anyone try and take some of it in?
I only watched much of the video, but I was keeping an eye on how he was doing that afternoon. It was the last Tuesday?
Yeah, well, probably was. I went back and saw some of the video. You think, oval racing, and then you see someone alone testing oval racing. I mean, literally, it's like, and it's just, I mean, it sounds really simple. It's a guy going around an oval. It's really dull. But also, how different is that track going to be when you've got, I don't know how many cars, I mean, it's like a big field, isn't it, for Indy? There's not a lot of room. I know he's testing so he can kind of get used to it, but what that track's going to be like when there are other cars on it, it's going to be nuts, completely different.
I think I mentioned before that I sort of said it's just a strange decision to do it. Probably not. He can get used to this going around by himself, like I say, but it's the in the dirty air of, I think it's over 40 cars in the mid-pack of an oval race that he's never done before. I mean, Fernando Alonso is, you know, he's very good, so I'm sure he'll be fine, but it just seems a bit risky to just go into the biggest oval race of the year with not much, well, many oval race experience. But I mean, hopefully he does well, because that'll be good for IndyCar and F1, but I just think it's a bit of a risk.
I'm really looking forward to watching the race personally, which probably says a lot, because that's what he's doing. And I know Zak Brown has said, let's have someone in Indy from Formula 1 every year as a talking point. And, you know, clearly the fact that we keep talking about it is doing wonders for that race, given IndyCar is probably quite shot. I mean, everyone keeps going on about how the cars are and things like that. So it's clearly doing a lot for them. And I mean, I've spoken to some people and they're like, well, look, Fernando knows what he's doing. He's a great racer, probably the best in the Formula 1 grid. He's just in the car. In that situation, he will be able to cope. But I'm sure that's the case. But I mean, it is a massive challenge. It's going to be fascinating, Steve.
Yeah, I don't think it's a risk, to be honest, because he's not only a very experienced Formula 1 driver, but it's an oval track. I mean, how difficult can it be?
See? It didn't look very difficult during testing. Right, we're going to move on from that to, I keep trying to get rid of McLaren, but I'm not going to manage it. Jenson Button. But a little bit of interest here from Mark Webber, who says, well, Jenson Button's not up for Monaco. I guess he's spoken to him. But I mean, Mark Webber's normally right about, you know, everything.
Yeah, I mean, well, it wasn't that long ago he was last racing. I mean, it's just going to be a one-off one race, whether he returns next season or not. I mean, would you be that sort of really geared up for it? I mean, it's not like he's been out of the sport for 5 years and think, actually, I'll really looking forward to. It was only last season, you know, it's not that long ago. Season's so close, so yeah, I wouldn't read that much into it.
I mean, let's be honest, McLaren have got to get the cars on the grid to start first, so, you know, at least he might get a free practice lap in. And the last bit I wanted to really touch on, and I haven't read much of this properly, so I don't know if you guys have, the idea that Brabham could possibly come back into Formula One. I mean, Christ, people have tried it time and time again. Possible buyer for Force India, I guess, because Vijay Mallya's got his hands full at the moment. Are we like, yeah, whatever, heard it all before?
We have heard it. These keep circulating, these rumours, like every handful of years or so. But I don't know. I mean, Carl will probably answer this a bit better. But I mean, are Brabham in any other racing at the moment? I don't know. I mean, in what form do they exist?
Because this sort of started a couple of years ago. So David Brabham sort of, it's kind of like a get everybody involved and then you can invest and try and get Brabham back into racing. But I think even then he squashed rumours of an F1 return and probably more based to endurance racing. So I think the F1 dream is a long way away. I think they just want to get into racing and then get the Brabham name about in other formulas.
So, obviously we've seen here locally a lot with Lotus just being badged onto things, yeah, and things like that. So it wouldn't even be something like that.
No, I think it's actually David Brabham. So it's actually is Brabham. But I think I don't think they're aiming for F1 quite at the moment. You never know long term, and you know, if financially in the future with Liberty Media there for a while, you never know, people could come back in. But I think it's a long, long way off.
I think it's interesting that we keep getting these stories about Force India and possible names coming in. We've had it with Aston Martin, haven't we? I think even Audi. These things keep coming up solely attached to Force India, and there's clearly someone working, you know, next door to Silverstone going, we need to f-ing sell this team quick, who can we link now to see if anyone will possibly go, oh, you're actually selling, are you? Oh, that's interesting. Yes, we'd like to buy it. I mean, I don't know, Citroën, Skoda.
It must be hard to sell the team at the moment, obviously with the legal issues that Mr. Mallier is going through at the moment, so surely his assets are probably bit tied up. So
we can only speculate, and we shouldn't, because that would probably be legally tricky. But there we go. Brilliant. Okay, well, just to plug, you can listen to our podcasts on your player of choice, and you can subscribe. You just need to visit nrf1.uk/podsubscribe. You'll be able to find your link, be it iTunes, Audio Boom, Google Play, Spreaker, Stitcher, Acast, whatever. And if you do listen to us on iTunes, it'd be great, wonderful, if you could give us a rating and a like, and tell iTunes that we're good, because then we'll be a little bit closer to the top and more people can listen to us, because obviously we're the best podcast with Formula One and stuff. You know that. I know that. It's fine. We'll keep it to ourselves until you put a review up. And loads of other stuff going on, of course, at nrf1.uk. Visit the website. The iTunes link, by the way, is nrf1.uk/isonitunes, obviously. This is a message for you, our dear NRF1 listeners. In the last year, there is a young British startup that has shaken up the shaving industry. Over 100,000 men have joined Cornerstone and are now getting a smoother shave than ever before. It's a simple combination of great products, amazing customer support, free delivery, and fair prices that has made Cornerstone the fastest growing shaving company in the UK. It's basically shaving's equivalent to Max Verstappen. They've won numerous awards for their super sharp German engineered razor, just think Mercedes, and outstanding customer support, like a Charlie Whiting hotline, along with endless plaudits from the media, including GQ, Esquire, and the Daily Telegraph. That would be Max Verstappen again. Cornerstone know they need to earn your trust, though, so to let you try their award-winning razor for a fraction of the standard price, with this offer you can get £10 off their razor and get started for just £4. Just visit cornerstone.co.uk and enter the code NRF1 at checkout. Visit cornerstone.co.uk to find out what a smooth shave actually feels like. And if you don't like your Cornerstone razor, Cornerstone will even give you your money back, no questions asked. Now, let's get back to that NRF1 podcast, shall we? Right, it's time for some tweets and social. And what I usually say at this point is that we do love hearing from you, and it's dead easy to get your voice on the NRF1 podcast so we can hear you. You can send your rants, questions, predictions, whatever you want. All you need to do is visit nrf1.uk and you can click on the red button under the podcast player, Or you can simply record an audio file and send it to us by email to nrf1podcast@gmail.com. Just some things then on the social. We had tweets from Daniel Harrison. Thanks for getting in touch, Daniel, and hopefully we're going to get him involved over the course of the season. Just flagging up the fact that Timo Glock had a bit of success in DTM. I think he won a race in DTM. Good old Timo Glock, honorary Norfolkian. And Daniel had a bit of speculation of his own. Let me read you what he said. He's just won his first race, Timo. Not Daniel, for BMW in DTM. BMW used to make engines for both Sauber and Williams. Who needs engines in the future, possibly? McLaren. Jensen Button says he wouldn't do another full season. I mean, we're probably barely going to do another race. So we have Stoffel van Dorn and Timo Glock as possible teammates in a McLaren BMW. Or Timo Glock will go to Renault, but then would they have two drivers who are both German? BMW maybe to return as a works team. It would mean that BMW would have some experience in their first year, and he's German, of course, like BMW. Basically, I think Daniel wants BMW back in Formula One.
I mean, it would be good if they were back in Formula One. When did they leave?
End of 2009.
Yeah. Just after they're sort of a third best team, really, weren't they? Just pretty successful. Yeah. So, it'd be good if they did come back in. There's another team on the grid, more drivers on the grid. I think they're, I don't know if they're involved in anything else really at the moment apart from DTM. So have they got a little bit of budget to play with, or will they go down the Formula E route?
Yes. I mean, it's phenomenal actually how many car manufacturers are involved in Formula E, which does, I mean, that doesn't really say much for Formula One, does it?
No, I think it's probably the difficulties of getting into Formula One. As you sort of say again, that maybe the ownership change that might help that. I think sort of manufacturers sort of see Formula E as a step forward. Or a route to go down at the moment. But yeah, sort of Formula One needs to find a way of enticing people, and it doesn't help when everybody keeps slagging off the engines.
No, it doesn't, or just the sport in general. Although people have been a bit better behaved this year so far, thankfully. Now, Toro Rosso's mysterious light. Kudos here to NRF1 listener Mark Anderson. Hello there, Mark. He flagged up Toro Rosso's got a weird light and this sort of flash. It was underneath the Toro Rosso front wing. Now, I think this was in Bahrain that he first picked up on it, and then it was still there, or he got an answer during Russia. Channel 4 F1 answered to confirm it was a speed over ground sensor, which was more accurate than wheel measurements. So they were doing it by a lot. Brilliant. And well done, Mark, and well done, Channel 4, for answering, because I think they've upped their stuff this year, Channel 4. I'm loving it. I'm really enjoying it. Now, the other thing I wanted to touch on, I've contemplated this. Should we talk about another podcast? I don't know. But Side Podcast, and they're a side with Joe's. I've listened to this the other day, about months after it's put out, because I really love listening to them. It was ticking along as normal, and then it got to the end, and it was a proper full-on, well, argument, let's be honest, about Grid Girls, which really showed up Joe in terms of his, I mean, he's famously curmudgeonly, but this showed up kind of just a dated view in terms of what the girls do. But I guess in terms of that there's no other option was the bit that got me. Sadly, it seems that Joe Sayward will no longer and Side Podcast have parted ways because of irreconcilable differences. Wow. So Joe will go and do other podcasts. I mean, he could come and do us if he wants, but he'd probably want us to ask, and we don't really do Skype. So it probably wouldn't work, but love Joe. But on this issue, it did kind of grate a bit. And I don't know, the thing to me, you could really easily solve it, because in fairness to Joe, I get the points in terms of, for some girls, it's a modelling opportunity that they can develop just like anything. I don't think it's great if you're a female racing driver that the only person who can hold a number in front of your car is a grid girl. Just have model blokes and model women. It doesn't matter if it's female or male. Just have good-looking people. Everything kept getting focused around being good-looking women, but Formula One is full of good-looking people, just in general, and talented and clever people as well. Just have blokes and girls on the grid. Would that solve it? And I remember now, this whole thing actually didn't start about grid girls. It was about a picture of a, and I haven't seen this picture, of a mighty fine female bottom, apparently, although it wasn't that good, apparently, and that was what kicked this all off. And in fairness, you're covering the sights and sounds of a Formula One Grand Prix, again, you will have good-looking people. Men probably with their guns out, you know, suns out, guns out. and you know, women with their legs out and what have you. And, you know, I don't want to get started. I'm probably going to start getting labelled like Joe. But I have no particular problem with that editorially. I have to deal with dealing with pictures. And I thought in this podcast, the guys kind of got wrapped up in very quickly in the ideology of the arguments, which is completely fair enough as opposed to the necessary details. But that's what I've... In a situation where you just want equality, I don't think you want to censor out things. I just think you want to open them up. So what I'm saying is, good-looking people, let's get just models of various genders holding up numbers for cars, Steve.
I quite agree, actually. I mean, it's probably just one of those traditional things that has just probably never, ever really been looked at and has just always continued, you know, from a completely different decade ago. But the other thing is you've got to take into consideration is you've got to respect other countries' cultures, because obviously Formula One is a tour over the world. So whilst we can sort of say about inequality in our own country, we're not forgetting we're only one race in our own country. So you've got to respect the cultures and potential views on equality in other countries as well, without getting too political, of course.
No, but that's a really interesting point, because ultimately if you're saying Formula One goes to a country where, well, you wouldn't dream of having a man hold a board up, well, that's fine, but it's less likely then that the woman is going to be in hot pants, I guess, as a direct correlation in terms of the cultural qualities of the country. But yeah, and Formula One does go towards different cultures, and I guess in a way they do kind of deal with that scenario probably well enough, given what whoever is promoting the race tends to wear. And yes, it most of the time they are women. They haven't always been women though, have they? We have had grid girls, grid boys. I hate the terms. Just the promotional people tend to be female.
Yeah. I don't really notice them much anymore. So surely from a sponsorship point of view, have you had one grid chap on each row, then that probably would promote the sponsor, because people would then notice and they would go, oh.
But forward thinking, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just, as well.
And yeah, I think it's just a way of, I think from the sponsorship, we're also pushing it. And I don't think if they just swapped it around every race or done something different. I think there's in MotoGP, I think there's a couple of girl races in Moto3, and she always has a bloke holding her brolly. And I think there's even girls that go around and have the same driver every time. But I just think for sponsorship, maybe if it was something different, then you would notice it, because you don't notice it at the moment. I don't anyway. So
I think, I mean, that Joe mentioned that, you know, some of the good girls and models may want to pick up a driver, just like it happens in football, and you know, like that happens, of course it does. But I felt like I wanted to have my say, because I was listening to this debate, and if you want to listen to it, listen to it, because it's fascinating listening, and I love side podcasts and what they do anyway. And it is a shame to lose, if that's how it ultimately pans out long term, lose the Aside with Joes, because they were great insights and a great rapport between the guys. But this podcast in particular, I think it was in January, it was literally just before the Melbourne Grand Prix, I think, or it may have been afterwards. There were just a few points where I think both of them were getting so het up they just missed some of the points. I think the points for me are, make it equal. It doesn't matter if people are promoting things, which I think Joe was trying to say, but it doesn't have to be women. It can be whatever. And I do think in a situation where we don't have any female drivers, I would love to see a couple of female drivers who are good enough in Formula One racing. It shouldn't matter. But at this point, the fact we haven't had one for 25 years, we've managed to get Melissa on the podcast before Formula One's got a drive, which is brilliant. Melissa was awesome. And it should just not be an issue. It should just be, if you're good enough, do it. And I can't help thinking it's one of those things where if you can't aspire to, you don't feel you can aspire to be a driver because that's an issue, then that gets in the way.
I think Formula One has done quite well in the fact that we have two team principals that are female.
Exactly.
Is it Ruth Bascom, strategic? Head of strategy at Sauber. There's quite a lot of women. I mean, even Mercedes, like one of the head of aerodynamics, I've forgotten her name, unfortunately, now, but it's female. So
that's good though, because you wouldn't know any of the aerodynamics,
yeah,
really.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah, so they're sort of off track from one is doing quite well. And I think as women see other women involved in, like Nisha Kaltenborn and Claire Williams, then obviously that gives them confidence to then get involved in engineering or however they want to get involved in a Formula One team. Just need that woman racer to maybe push through that barrier and then give confidence. I mean, even from karting, I race against quite a lot of female racers, but then they did seem to stop after a certain point, and maybe just need to give them that confidence to keep going and then we never know.
Well, I mean, that's the debate. Why is it they choose to stop? And it could be all manner of factors. We don't know. But that you know, that's probably the things that need to be worked on to, you know, get to where we want to be. And I hope that came across all right, because it's just adding to the debate. That's all I wanted to do, and I hope we've done that. And that's kind of what this podcast is for. But we are going to wrap it up there, because you know, I think it's probably time to move on. But just to flag up the social media channels, I think I did that earlier, but I'll do it again. Twitter and Facebook at the NRF1. Lots of chances for you to interact with us, of course. Just visit nrf1.uk. Email us, nrf1podcast@gmail.com. And if you like what we do here on the NRF1 podcast and you want to help us spread the word to even more people, you can become an NRF1 supporter. All you need to do is visit patreon.com/NRF1, P-A-T-R-E-O-N. All money we get from our sponsorships goes straight back into advertising the podcast and trying to reach more people across the F1 world. So if you like what we do and feel it's deserving of more ears, you know what to do. But for now, Steve, thank you very much.
No problem.
Kyle, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, of course, to our proud partners, Grand Prix Racing Online. You can sign up at gpro.net/NRF1. This has been the NRF1 podcast. Your Spain preview is on its way. Until then, a very goodbye.